Welcome to this podcast, The First Lady of Germiston, Life According to the Chaotic Order of Viv Vermaak. Who is Viv? Well, she's an award-winning spokesperson and acclaimed journalist with an eclectic point of view of the world around her and an even more unique way to walk through life. I sit down with Viv throughout this podcast series as we chat about her ethos of quote-unquote dismotivation and how she embraces the chaos. Enjoy. All right, so we are with, I am with the First Lady of Germiston, Viv Vermaak, who is an award-winning speaker on the topic of addiction, amongst many, many other acclamations that she has also achieved throughout her life. But at this very point, we want to have a bit of a serious talk about, I would say, the reverberation of the life of an addict and these interactions, experiences that you've had with a ton of people that you've spoken to, that you have obviously navigated throughout your own experience, and also where you stand right now. You made a very interesting kind of like starting statement, opening statement there, where you said that your, I would say, policies do not line up with the AA policies on how to, what is it, define addiction, to approach addiction, to solve addiction. Where did you start coming across differences?
I went to my first AA meeting in Germiston about 30 years ago. And you know the drill at an AA meeting. Look, I did go drunk. And you have to say, you're an alcoholic. So I got up and said, my name is Viv, and I'm not an alcoholic. And I don't know what the rest of your problem is here, but it's very cute that you're trying to sort it out. But I, whatever you have, I don't have any of that thing. So I was asked to never come back, obviously, because it's not appropriate to do these things.
Why did you go drunk? Why did you go at all?
According to reliable witnesses, I had a drinking problem,
okay,
which I didn't agree with at the time. Anyway, so 30 years later, now I've been to rehab and I'm sober, and I go back to another AA meeting in Germiston and I rethink my position on this matter. Well, the same drill. And I said, well, how am I going to be honest about this? How am I going to be honest about my philosophical and scientific position while being honest to these people? Okay, so everybody goes, oh, I'm an alcoholic. And I say, hi, my name is Viv and I'm a drunkie.
Okay.
So there is the distinction. And I went to the chairman and I said, I have a big problem with the way AA does a lot of things, but will you allow me to come? Because I think there's value in the group structures, but I have a problem with the disease concept of addiction. I have a problem with the handing yourself over to God concept. And I think science has shown that addiction, or what manifests as addiction, has different causes and different remedies.
Okay.
And if you're happy for me to engage and challenge you, then will you allow me? And they said yes, which I'm very grateful for. But for me, the concept of it as a disease, as something that happens to you that is caused by a chemical, wasn't helpful, because that's not the way I experienced myself.
Okay.
I found addiction, in my case, alcohol, and I'm going to use these words loosely because otherwise we don't know how to relate to it.
Sure.
So the addiction, which manifests in severe alcohol use, as a manifestation of problems in my life. So when I went to rehab, I argued with them about it. And they say, you have a disease and we're going to cure you like this. And I said, I don't think I have a disease. I'm fucked up. It's a very big difference. If you treat me as somebody who's ill, it's not going to solve the problem. Alcohol solved problems for me. Okay, it caused 10 times more. But a more valuable way for me to experience it is that alcohol filled a hole. It was a companion. It was an inhibition loosener. Alcohol solves as many problems as it causes. And to call it a disease takes away the agency from the person who has it. There's something wrong with me, I agree.
Yeah.
So when you say you're drunk, you're not an alcoholic, people say, yeah, but you drink too much. Nobody ever said that. I'm just saying that we misunderstand the causes of it. And I recently found the work of Dr. Gabo Mate, who's now world-renowned. He used to be a medical doctor and then a psychologist now, and he's helped reframe it for me. But at the time, I didn't know the word, so I just argued with people. in that alcoholism or addiction is a manifestation of earlier traumas that you didn't deal with. And that trauma will come back as envy or anger or distraction, which is what addictions are. But now you understand it different.
This was when you came up and basically, quote unquote, blasphemed those people that were watching you and listening to you and said, you're not.
I said, I'm not. I said, I'm a drunkie. And then they laugh. And I've been going to many AA meetings and I've never said I'm an alcoholic, and I said, I'm a drunkie. And will you allow me to express myself in that way? So it was blasphemy for them. But I do think the AA for me had things that weren't helpful. Because if you position it as a disease and the alcohol stalks you like a demon and the alcohol is the bad thing, you don't really solve the problem.
Sure.
So for many people, AA works for about 2% of people, by the way. Okay. That's the success rate of AA. But for me, it wasn't a helpful paradigm. But I appreciated that you could share stories. And then even with people who are the very religious AA types, and me, who's another atheist AA type, that there's still common ground. And the group experience of sharing, whatever form that takes, is valuable. And the behavioral therapy groups have a different approach. They don't follow the AA recipe and they don't have that God thing. They just ask you to be aware, and they will now have a different approach to
this. This is how you work through your quote-unquote addiction?
Correct. Right. Correct.
So you broke away from AA structured groups, or did AA allow you that platform to continue the support? And
look, AA is great. I tried everything. So in my journey now, you do understand you have a problem, but my way of engaging with the world is intellectual, or that's how I experience it, and science-based. So I had to find a way to frame this thing that I could feel it's not a disease. I can tell you now, this thing is not a disease. This thing is coming from within as a reaction to something, but I don't know what it was.
Why? Yeah. Why did you want to stop? Why? For real?
For me, I don't know what's a bigger mystery for me. That I ever started drinking or that I ever stopped. They're both to me as part of me, and they're both as alien to me. And that part, I understand now the mechanism of what Marta would call trauma. But I eventually stopped because my body collapsed. I was on the way to a work function.
Okay.
I get in my broek gekak op pad werk to dress this for the Christmas.
Yeah.
And I started shaking so much that I was too terrified to carry on driving. And I was too terrified to stop.
Okay.
And then you understand whatever you have to do, it's now beyond a thing that you can discuss or intellectualize.
Did you want to immediately stop?
No.
Obviously.
And can I tell you?
I need to
I tell you? I didn't want to stop drinking, but you understand that when your body is that overwhelmed, and the physical symptom that overwhelmed was anxiety, not drunkenness or hungoverness, because your body gets to such a severe state of anxiety and adrenal overload that you're shaking and you can't breathe and you're too afraid to go to sleep because you're not sure that you'll be able to carry on breathing. And then you wake up and you're not dead, and then you're worried about that as well. So it becomes that your body overwhelms you.
But
of course, you have to drink quite a lot to get to that stage.
My point is that people can be in hospital many, many times having cardiac arrest or liver failure or this, whatever it is, and continue to do what they want to do.
I have friends like that.
Yeah.
I have friends like that who have been in rehab 7 or 8 times. Now, the science on that, MATCH study about alcohol, the biggest study ever done, so they followed cohorts of people, people who followed the AA protocol, cognitive behavior therapy, the shock therapy, and then the people who did nothing. And guess what? The results
were the same. Yeah.
So it appears to be there's an, sometimes it's a random thing. For many people, why did you stop drinking? Some people can't remember, is that?
Yeah.
God, we stopped. I worked at a new place and the people didn't drink. So for some people, it was a completely unconscious thing. I went to the doctor and I said I must, and I did. But there does seem to be a locus of internal decision-making that you must want to stop. That part the AA got right, that you must You must want to stop the behavior, whether it is to impress your Muslim girlfriend who doesn't drink or whatever. Yeah, so there has to be something, and sometimes there's no reason at all.
Here's my thing. When, with as an addict, one will put first priority the substance, whatever it may be. Right, okay. How, and everything else will find a way for logically becoming second to third to fourth to fifth priority. What was that shift? You understand? Because the thing is that, like, for so long and for so hard, it still was number one priority. It still is, quote unquote. Let's put yourself in that particular transition period. You're sitting here with priority 2, 3, 4, whatever it is. Yeah. Something has to replace it. And it's not because I just want to be a better person. It's because I want to be a better because there's a second and a third priority that's shifting over. For you, what was that?
I wish it was as clear and absolute, but there are many things. I'm just going to mention some things. Mm. And I realized I was addicted to chaos, which is very easy with alcohol. And I'm addicted to intense experiences. Mm. So I like one of my favorite drinking stories. And I had a very young lover at the time. We got drunk and we broke into the Germiston swimming pool and Karyakado, and the police came to fetch us.
Yeah.
And then we're in that flamboyant, charismatic, drunken mood.
Yeah.
We got the police back to my house, and we were on the table that you're sitting now. There was 2 or 4s and a bowl of sushi, and it chatted to the police for 4 hours.
Wow.
So that type of intensity, alcohol helps you get that. It makes you bold. It makes other people interesting. But it helps you explore a very authentic and free part of yourself.
True.
And in the culture of the pubs, especially the ones we have here, we are like Vikings. That is our Valhalla, and we know that about each other. And that intense authenticity is very appealing for me. Then the chaos, if you're always chaos, it distracts you,
of course,
what Marte says, from the discipline, thing that hurt or the pain, whatever it is, whatever that you're trying to hide. Chaos is lovely as a form of distraction.
Well, it's a better excuse.
You can say it like that. I don't mind words like excuse or it's a crutch or whatever.
No. I'm saying, why I say it's a better excuse, I'd rather be focusing on chaos and fixing my chaos or handling my chaos than handling my sorrow and my pain.
Especially if you don't know that it was trauma.
Of course.
So if you're unaware of that is why you're doing it, it just feels like a better way of being. But that concept of authenticity is very important. And sobriety mostly does not solve the problem. So people think, and that is another caution I have against the AA formula, is that they craft their meetings, and you have this thing called sharing, but they will tell you the structure of the share.
No.
You have to start, my life was bad, then I stopped drinking, now my life is good. Mm. For me, it wasn't like that at all.
Yeah, why?
I didn't come out better. Everybody else came out 3 months later, they married again, they're 3 BMWs in a beautiful house.
Yeah.
My life was the same level of shitness.
I agree.
Sobriety, life is shit.
Yeah.
Sober or drunk. So I never shared at AA because I couldn't tell an honest story that fitted their mold.
Mm.
I wanted to tell them, then I said, my life is as shit as ever, I can just feel it more. I'm still the same cunt I was, I'm just sober. My family doesn't love me.
Yeah.
Nobody wants me. Sobriety did nothing for me. It took 4 years for me to appreciate it.
I agree.
So that is a caution I have about the AA formula, that you pushed into these extraordinary stories. And people tell them, you're talking shit.
Yeah.
But you don't feel validated if you don't have this miraculous bioslim, I've lost 20 kgs in 1 month story. So that's a caution I have, that you're forcing people into rainbow stories that aren't true.
So did you find an underground culture of other people that felt the same way you did?
No, I didn't. Except when I spoke about it at the conference where I won that award and in some of my writings. Mm. And then you get the AA fundamentalists and the addiction specialists.
So
very, very irresponsible for you to tell people alcohol isn't the demon and the AA doesn't work. Extreme backlash. But some people say, thank you for sharing that, because I felt the same way. And your response is, well, I can't make it better for you. This I can assure you. Because life is hard, sober or drunk. But the science of it and the behavioral mechanistics I understand better now. And with guys like Gabo Mate getting more prominence, it's becoming more mainstream that you understand that alcohol is fixing a pain.
Of course, yeah.
And it's not a disease.
But again, that's okay. So that's
sure.
You know, my word is semantic, but and we know that with every addiction, there's a wonderful origin story. When I say wonderful, it's rich and it has got many depths. A lot of people go to psychologists to go and figure out. For me, it's procrastination of not facing it or dealing with it. Let's just talk about it till we're finished. I understand to not feel alone. It's a good thing to go and find a community if you are also crashing and burning, whether it is with alcohol, drugs, food, whatever it may be, I don't know, whatever is really destroying your life. You're probably doing it in isolation. I get that part of being able to feel a little bit warmer as a human being, not being this empty void. There must be a need. Yours was health, right? Was it anything else? So was it to, I don't know, find your place in society again, or find a voice that you lost, or reconnect with family?
I wish I could see into the future. And that's the one thing that AA gave me, the one day at a time thing. And people don't understand the severity.
Mm.
One day at a time takes away hope. You must remember, one day at a time is just today. If you think about tomorrow, you're fucked. Because if you delay what it takes to get through today till tomorrow,
I agree,
you will fall off. That's a very tough concept. So there's no hope. That helped me until the one day at a time becomes a week at a time and you don't think about it.
Mm.
But I didn't have a vision for the future at all. At the time, you're so desperate. That type of clarity, it's impossible.
But you want something out of this. It can't.
Yes, I know. I'm sure you're correct. In that moment,
yeah.
You're wanting an epiphany. There was no epiphany.
I know, just desperation. Yes. Again, and that is something that people should say more often, is that right now, the difference between a sober and a non-sober life, whatever it is, right, is clarity, maybe. That's a little bit, that's the difference. It's not the
BM. These things are subconscious.
It's not the,
you see, these are subconscious.
Everything you feel, it hurts a little bit more. It's going to cut a little bit deeper.
Sure.
And that is, that's what I found. I found that was the big realization, was there wasn't like a pot of gold.
There was no pot of gold.
Yes.
And then I'm telling people it's going to be very shit. And quite frankly, people say, I went for 2 years once on something. So listen, I'm not going to go around recommending sobriety to people. I don't think that's good advice.
No.
I'm not going to recommend sobriety. It's terrible.
But there must be a reason why you haven't fallen off the bandwagon, so to speak.
I also don't understand compared to my other friends. I did a lot of work on when I understood the trauma-related work.
Yeah.
Like thinking.
Yeah.
Sit on the roof and think on what started doors and think. And then once I understand, for me, I find solace in science. That's my excuse.
Yeah.
So, that mechanism is then it becomes clear how that works. And you get sick and tired of repeating the same patterns. This is just a part of you because I have a high value of my own intellect. So I'm going, how stupid are you? You have a mirror of an intellect, but you make the same mistakes over and over. That's not clever, girl. You've done this like this for 50 years. Just do it different.
Right.
And do it different for long enough, and then you get the signs. It takes 6 months for your body to even realize it stopped drinking.
Right.
Just carry on. It's too much effort to make that U-turn.
Mm.
If I ever have to make that U-turn again, it will be too much effort. Just do it. I went to a health facility. They have a medical doctor. They have a psychologist, and they have an African healer.
Okay.
So latter. Clapping all three of you.
Yeah.
So the medical doctor is a very, also just this interesting character, and this place is in the mountains, and you go for nature walks, and there's kudus and zebras, and you drink water, and there's saunas, and eat blooming vegetables and stuff. So he could be a doctor, and he's 70, but he walks faster than anyone up and down the blooming Skurvebergen. And he mostly walks barefoot, and he's a vegetarian, and he has a ponytail. But the most straight up and down Calvinistic Afrikaner that you've ever met. So it's just fantastic now. And now you're wondering, are you going to tell this guy how much you drink? Anyway, he doesn't care. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. No, sit the door, and he won't be now. So, Lester, dokter, ek wil eerlijk wees, ek het a drank probleem, I have a drinking problem, but I don't believe in the AA's model. Is there something that you guys can do for me? So let's first do the tests. And go, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. And then they have to test moves by a frog and blood and liver. And then you have to do the test where they test your peripheral nerves, your peripheral neuropathy, and they hit your, you know, they hit your knee with a hammer.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, no, doctor, you can go. You can go. I don't mind eat it. He says, I've been eating. So I'm going to stick it. God, I didn't pay all this money to come with your bone bruise. But
why?
He says, madam, there's nothing wrong with my hammer. My knee didn't even move.
Why?
Peripheral neuropathy, yes. The alcohol makes your nerve endings not work so much.
Holy shit.
So I'm shouting at the poor man that he's hitting me with a broken hammer. I said, mevrouw, this needy hammer. That was a problem. Then he says, I'm not going to judge you on how much you drink. We have helped addicts here before, but it's not our main function. And he said something, and I thought, fuck, this is a beautiful way to reframe the 12-step model. He said, I want you to go out and mix with people who are normal. Mm. Our problem is the AA tells you it's normal to be like this. I want you to see that the way you are is not normal.
Yeah.
But I don't want you to tell the people about your problem.
Yes.
You will spoil their experience.
Of course.
But see how people who take the health seriously cope with things.
Yes.
They force themselves to go for walks. They go for saunas.
Yes.
They talk about things. But please, that's how we can help you, by showing you it's abnormal. Their experience was that when you go to the AA, oh, you're the sickte. Oh, you have a disease. It's not you.
Yeah.
It's a demon alcohol. That teacher, you normalize the behavior. And I thought he had a good point.
Yeah,
I thought he had a very good point. He says, no, nobody's... So I said, no, okay, you can go through my bags and check for booze. I'm not going to go. I can't do it. If you have a drink, what you drink? If you have a drink, it's not my problem. I'm giving you a facility.
Yeah.
You can make use of it. We have lectures. We have food. We have everything here for you. It's up to you whether you want to use it. I thought it was a valid position.
Mm.
And now we're going to go out of here, you're going to walk out of here, and you're going to pretend that you never spoke to me. Go and look how normal people live. And I thought that was such a unique way, and because he's so healthy and his family healthy, and they're all so healthy, and I thought that was a lovely counterpoint to everything we've been taught about.
Well, how did you feel when you started to talk to other people?
No, you can't talk to me about your booze.
No, I get that. But how did you feel?
Then you understand.
Alienation.
Yes, then I understood. Listen, again, with me, with my self-identity as this murder of an intelligent, high IQ person, look how these people are coping. And they did. Many of them had eating problems. They had... who are the people? Ganglion problems.
Sex problems.
They didn't speak about that. But the people did speak about addictions, and now they struggle with it, but they will get up in the morning and they'll go for a walk.
Yeah.
Not like us drunkies, who lie and thought, will there be a boo? The world is so bad. So I thought that was good for me to expose that. I'm going to jump back quickly. Before I went to the psychologist, I went to the traditional healer. And then you throw the bones and look at whatever. And I thought, I'm not going to be honest with this woman. I'm not going to tell this woman what my problem is, what. But eventually it comes out. So listen.
You want to test her?
Francina, I drink a lot. I'm here to find out with my drinking. And Francina said, listen, I can just look at you and the way you behave. For me to tell her to stop drinking is not going to work. So I can tell you. So what I want you to do, I want you to take that bottle, ne? And you put it on the shelf, and I want you to talk to it. But don't be horrible to it. Just remember, you picked that bottle up yourself. Don't be horrible to it. That bottle has been your friend. So don't be horrible to it, but you must be firm. And you say, listen, Wena, you've been so close to me for so long, but now I just want you to go a bit... walk a bit behind me.
Yeah.
But I'm not banishing you. I'm not rejecting you.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I need some space.
Right.
And she framed it to me as a conversation with an important other person. And said, instead of drinking that, drink Spoletta or something. So it's not good advice for a health spa. So when I went to the psychologist and I said to her, Francina, she said, well, she had a very good take on it, because in cognitive behavioral therapy we do encourage an internal dialogue where we understand the role of the addiction as something that filled a hole. So in one weekend I went through all of these things And then you come out and you do understand that it's a very lonely thing, and your own shit is your own shit, and there's nothing anybody can do except yourself. But I explored all of it, and I found an integrated way to stay sober, but it's because of the science. Well, the science is terrifying.
At the end of the day, when did you believe you had the skill set to overcome this?
I still don't believe I have it. I've been blessed with the stability of sobriety. I don't know if I have the skill set. So the only way I can measure it is with some people who haven't managed, or... No, I don't believe I have the skill set. And I don't say that in a platitudinal, like you're, all of us can fall off the wagon, which we can.
How do you know you're... How will you talk your way out of that?
I understood the Rat Park study, which was a landmark addiction study of many years back. We have rats in a cage with cocaine or sugar or whatever, and they overdose on cocaine until they die. Then they put... The scientists who did the study realized that rats don't really live in cages. So it created another rat park, which had other rats in it, whatever you put in a rat, little swings or whatever. Those rats in that park, even when the sugar and cocaine was available, they didn't take it.
Well, why?
It's your environment. It's not the booze, it's not the cocaine, it's the cage. You have to fix the cage. The cage is a much harder thing to fix.
Yeah.
You have to fix your environment.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing AA is wrong. They make it about the booze.
Yeah.
That same rat would overdose on the coke there, didn't touch it there when he was in a good social environment, or he had things that kept him busy. So I had to slowly fix my environment. Mm. I had to start doing things. I had to start writing. Mm. I had to be authentic about who I was. I sat in the morning and looked at the sun coming up because I understood how important sleep was.
Yeah.
Alcohol disrupts your sleep patterns.
Of course.
Now you sleep better. Yeah. Suddenly, your adrenal function works better. Your dopamine function works better. You feel better, and you don't know why. When you feel better, you can do better.
Yeah.
So it's a very complicated set of fixing the cage for me that I believe contributed.
Do you ever look at the mirror and see that Viv?
I am 100% that Viv. Drunkie Viv is still my identity because I've been drunk for 40 years.
Does she scare you?
No, I've learned to...
Does she intimidate you?
No, not at all. I just accept her now. But drunkie, my name is Viv and I'm a drunkie. Look, I'm not like those addicts that believe if I have a sip of glass, I will go over the edge, because it happened to me by mistake. I don't believe that the mechanical mechanism has been proven to be untrue, and withdrawal symptoms are largely anxiety. It's not physical, chemical. But I accept that Viv, because she was there for 40 years.
Yeah.
Suburb was only there for 4 years. So that Viv is very much me, because the underlying thing that Vivian was trying to hide with her drinking, I'm only now starting to assert myself and set boundaries.
Which part of that can you share? Or is it too personal?
It's the normal childhood shit.
I know.
And we grew up in an era, and Gabo Mata, I'll just, whenever I don't want to say things, I'll make him say it, but okay. He does say it. So your aligned groups, according to him, like your race, people who were diminished by society because of their race, or I don't know if your family went through it in immigration status.
They did, yeah.
Well, there we go. So now you feel that, and literally just by being alive, or as a woman, I grew up in a very patriarchal household, just by being alive, you are diminished. And sometimes it has more overt expressions like sexual abuse or violence, or just you don't care. Now suddenly, you go through your life feeling inferior, and that doesn't happen to happen that they end up like me, like a extraordinary drinking capacity.
Sure.
But now you start feeling inferior, and that guilt and shame that you allowed things to happen to you manifests as anger.
Mm-hmm.
It manifests as aggression, and it manifests as chaos.
You want to get your retribution?
No, I don't. No. I'm now over it. I'm completely over it, because whoever did what they did to me are the result of what happened to them. So for a long time, I had this extreme anger, because anger is very powerful.
Yeah.
And it's very positive, because you have a reason to be angry, because these motherfuckers did this.
Yeah.
Well, psychopaths are people too. I can assure you, psychopathy and evil is also a defense mechanism. I'm not saying I must keep on paying for its lunch, or it must live in my house.
Yeah.
But I understood how well they are the way they are because of how they were. But now I have a boundary. But
your focus is on you now.
Yes.
Yes.
And to keep the boundary. And I've learned that whatever psychopathy other people have, you're going to come across these people in life, and sometimes they win and sometimes you win. They're both acceptable options, but not everything. The world is against me. It probably is. Doesn't matter. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some. Mm. And you have to set that boundary yourself, because our battle is never with the demon. It's the fact that you allowed the demon to get away with it. That's a real friction.
Yeah.
From when we became an industrialized people. Before that, if you lost the fight to the saber-toothed tiger, you died.
Yeah.
Suddenly we stay alive.
Yeah, you're alive.
Now, that feeling of terror becomes guilt and shame. It's a psychological mechanism that the evolutionary advantage of guilt and shame is that you don't repeat the stupid behavior. But now guilt and shame becomes their own demons.
Mm.
Then I started understanding that. Oh, God, I'm just like a robot.
Yeah.
I'm just like a robot. Well, then you must do the things like a robot and press different buttons to get different results.
When you see someone that is the climax of their current addiction, do you judge them?
I sometimes do, and I'm going to use the word judge in a broad sense, but I do have sometimes just please myself. Yeah, look, I've come at you, you did it, you must be somehow weak or that, even though I know it's an incorrect way of thinking.
Yeah.
Because I've managed to do it, especially people who consider themselves intelligent. How clever are you to do the same thing? So I do have sometimes, but not always. What I've also found is my tolerance to be in their company is lower because it doesn't serve me. But I've also realized now that the burden I was on people, because the way that you're not available to them, the way that everything is aggression, the way that everything becomes a drama, and then you feel guilty. Oh no, but I was like that. I mustn't judge this person, or I mustn't withdraw from their company. That's bad.
Yeah.
And then you get over that and you go, I must do what serves me.
Yeah.
And addicts can be a more of a drag.
Yeah.
And I don't have time for drags at the moment. I have many other problems.
It's your own drags. What about if it's someone that you unconditionally love?
I'm especially talking about that. I'm not talking about that 100%. So I adjust my behavior. I've stopped preaching about it. But, you know, when you deal with addicts, if your addiction doesn't have a chemical component. So, but of people have chemical after a certain time of the day, you can't speak to them and they have memory blackouts.
Right.
Then you get very frustrated, they can't remember. Now you go, okay, if I want to speak to you because I love you, it has to be between 9 and 1 in the morning. Anything after that, I must understand, is not meaningful.
I get that.
But the judgment, if they feel the judgment, it doesn't help them. Having said that, as a drunk, nothing helps you. You can judge me, you can do whatever I want, I will rile against you.
Sure.
But somewhere in the distance, if you still tolerate me despite that, somewhere it does shine through. But you shouldn't feel, if you're living with an addict, that you owe them something. You have to think of yourself first.
But I do, you know what, people who have had a beacon, even a little bit of light, I find, and I can speak for myself, that was what brought me to an end of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not because I was doing it for them, but because they remained. They remained.
It will shine through the darkness, that light will find its way through the cracks. Absolutely.
They were patient.
Did they judge you, though?
No.
Okay. I think maybe that's what I've done wrong, and what maybe what. No, it's not wrong.
Otherwise, they would have treated me differently.
Absolutely. So
there's tolerance. And those there patients.
So if you did it, what I did with my family for various addictions, eating what, it's not going to help. Maybe the way it was done to you was a better way, and this is the way I now have with people in my life, that I hold back on that frustration or anger, even judgment, because it doesn't help them. It doesn't help me either, because then it's a part of you.
You have to compartmentalize.
That, yeah.
Sure. I mean, the thing is, again, it wasn't. The more you become intertwined with an addict's life,
that's
you've asked for, and it is a massive fuck up at the end of the day. It is, because it is, because here is chaos and destruction. That's what it is.
Like I said, my addiction was chaos. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not growth and fruition. That's for damn sure.
So my message to family members is, whatever you do, it has to be for yourself. So if you sacrifice yourself on behalf of the addict, it's your choice.
Yes.
Because you get a payoff because you want to be a hero. But make no mistake, you must make a decision for yourself, and nothing you can do will make that person go sober or become an addict, except sometimes loving them has a magical quality. But that loving them won't cure them.
No. But I will say this. I took it from my sister's point of view, who lived with me. And her point of view was, let's go corporal. I'm saying, should she take that decision and make it corporal, what's it going to solve? It will solve something, but what does it solve? She could have taken that decision any time, many, many years to do that, right? And enough infinite nights and days to do that. And she said, no. But compartmentalization and saying, what is it? Where's the cause and effect? Obviously, I'm not going to be a victim to this. I will abstain to a certain extent. But for me, it was a marvel for me to see, and it took me many, 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 many years to believe them.
Sure.
That they could actually still, even marginally, love me.
Thank you for sharing that. And I think that was very powerful, and that you could say it in those words to me. And I can tell you, exactly the same experience. Look, my family, I don't think, they're not at that point yet, but I can see there's some light in the distance. Yeah. Maybe. And it's been 4 years. I don't expect it or think I'm worthy of it, by the way.
Yeah.
But I do think it is... look, it's not a mirror of a light of beacon welding out to addicts.
Yeah.
Suddenly your family will love you again because they won't.
No.
It doesn't work like that. But it helps to understand that life is chaotic, life is terrible, and it's still beautiful and worth trying.
Yeah. If you don't understand, let's say, again, just for example, the concept of love, then how are you supposed to identify it, recognize it in someone else and say, that's what addicts do struggle 100%. With. And be like, yes, it's true, or it might exist, or this, whatever it is, a support or success, whatever it is. But if you don't, take the time to actually build like a little block, a building block of what this actually looks, feels, tastes, and is.
Amen.
It can be given to you in, like I say, in abundance.
So you start again from scratch.
Yeah.
I learned that reciprocal process with my blooming Jack Russell. My family is going, what the hell happened to you? Did you go to a psychiatrist? Was it the AA? I said, no, it's the bloody door. For the first time, I understood everything I do will have a mirroring effect, and if I accept the love, it will come to me. Never occurred to me before.
Yeah.
Never occurred to me before.
Yeah, it's a foreign language.
Yes, but...
to you, I'm saying, in that instance. Yeah.
So now, what if we go to school and we don't teach them biology, maths, and you say, listen, the people you'll hurt most in your life are the people you love. If you had this happen to your childhood, you're going to behave like this. It will cause incredible suffering. Adjust your behaviors like this, but we don't. That's the most important part of being human, but we don't teach our children that. I wish we could teach our children like this in school.
Of course, but life has to be lived.
Sure, but can't we just, why can't we go and change Odrek Skinder to Liefde Kinder? Hey, why not? Nie elke doen nie. Kom ons praat met mekaar. Kom ons praat oor die kak wat ons pla. En elke week sê ons mekaar, wanneer jy dit doen, voel ek so. En as jy, if you're going to the workplace like this, you'll be unsociable and lose your job.
Yeah.
Work skills. That should be work skills that they teach.
In closing,
life...
Why was it important for you to share this?
I think because it took so much psychic energy, out of me, and the relief that I eventually tried a different way.
Mm-hmm. You were capable.
Yeah, and it's just like, if it took so much energy for me, it must be worth it. I don't even know if it is worth it. But if it takes so much energy and to be able to reflect and stand in awe and wonder at something that you still can't explain, and I can't even tell people go for it or not.
Yeah.
But the exploration and the awe and the richness of understanding and the possibility, maybe the possibility of that love for my family, maybe.
Yeah.
And maybe that's enough.
Follow us on Instagram at Chris Jordan Media, or go to my landing page, chrisjordanmedia.net.